Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to the first of four Anime Boston 2015 podcast interview specials. Now, before I begin, as I won't be doing a No Borders, No Race episode next week due to some catching up on reporting, I do want to give a huge thank you to the folks over at Carlson and McKenzie over at 100.7 WZLX, Boston's Classic Rock, for having me on their show. I was very worried the night before I got the invite, but when I got to chat with them before the show and via email, my nervous levels plopped down to zero. They gave me the chance to defend the art of anime, and while I know it's not their thing, I appreciate the fact that they took the time to listen. And I look forward to Anime Boston next year even more so, as not only will I be representing the land of Ash, but also being a special correspondent for ZLX during the convention. I am so happy that I'll be given this opportunity and am pretty much counting down the days until AB 2016. Of course, I've got other cons and events to go to beforehand, so I'm sure that time will fly by quickly. And now, on to our first interview with legendary voice actor Richard Epcar. As some people may know, Richard Epcar is the voice of Bato in the Ghost in the Shell series, as well as the crazy title character in Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo, and the current voice of Raiden in Mortal Kombat and the Joker in the DC Universe fighting games. He has also played three of the main characters in the Lupin the Third Universe and has helped write and direct the English dubs of such award-winning films as Cinema Paradiso, Old Boy, Iron Monkey, and the Grandmaster. For this interview, I am joined by a couple of other sites, including our own pal, JC Riley from the Issues Program, and Chris and David of the Otaku Intuit podcast. So, without further ado, here is the Anime Boston 2015 press panel interview with Richard Epcar.
Why would I ever do that? I'd be, you know, that'd be ridiculous. No, I'm kidding. Of course, I would. That would be like a dream come true. You know, I would love to do that. I would really love to do something like that. I think I would be very good in it, and I would bulk up and get huge to do it, and I would look just like him. So if that would happen, that would be awesome. But I don't see it happening. They'll probably get some big star like Johnny Depp or something like that, like Bato, and you know. That's the way they do it. They got Scarlett Johansson to play the major. So, you know, I'm not really sure who they're going to get to play Bato. But maybe they'll get somebody that's really a big, beefy guy that looks great, and then maybe they'll have to call me in to do the voice. Yeah, there you go.
Following up on The Ghost in the Shell, because this year marks the 20th anniversary of the original animated movie.
Right.
So what do you think it is about Makoko, Bato, and the rest of the characters that really just helps stand the test of time?
Well, I think that the really interesting thing about Ghost in the Shell, and the thing that fascinates me, and I think the thing that really hooks people into it, is that it's not just a cop shoot 'em up. It's not just, you know, an adventure series. There's all of these different levels of psychology involved, and they ask a lot of very pertinent questions, like the things that we're going to be experiencing or are experiencing right now, and that is the morality of technology and the way we use our technology. And there's all this technology that's being developed and created, and technology is not inherently good or evil. It's who uses it and for what purposes. And I think that this show in particular asks a lot of these hard questions, like what's going to happen when we're able to do this and that. And, you know, and I think that to me it's fascinating. And it's a little scary because I think that technology is growing exponentially, but we as a race or culture are basically plodding along, you know. And so I think that we're going to have to be thinking about this sort of thing a lot sooner than we think. These questions that they ask on the show all the time, you know. So I think that's the fascinating thing of the show, and I think that's why people really get hooked on it.
I couldn't agree more.
Thank you.
Issues coming?
Okay, this is sort of a follow-up. It seems like we're doing chains,
okay.
But this takes a different turn.
All right.
All right? We're talking about technology and how things change and improve.
Right.
My particular question is, well, first a comment. I really enjoyed your wife Ellen's role inside the Ghost in the Shell 2 movie, Innocence.
Thank you.
When she was playing Dr. Haraway.
Haraway, I directed her
and,
in that.
Yes, you wrote it, you directed her. You also were in the actual exact scene with as Bato. But her monologue was just fantastic as far as
it's
very similar to the Cyborg Manifesto.
Yes.
Now, was Donna Haraway her actual name in the movie, or did you use that to your advantage as far as, okay, this should work as far as the script for the show?
The names were pretty much the names they had in the movie.
Just by chance.
But the difficult part, particularly with Ghost in the Shell Innocence 2, was that everything was all the dialogue was a platitude or a saying, or a religious, saying. So it was to take that kind of stuff, first of all, and make it fit in the mouth, to lip sync it, and to make sense of it and make it sound like natural conversation. That was a real chore to do that. It was very difficult to do that because the whole thing, they were talking in these platitudes. So I had to kind of pick and choose the things. I had to remember it wasn't my film. You know, and I had to stay true to the creator of the film, and that was his movie. But I wanted to make it into English, but I wanted it to have the same gist that he was creating. But I also wanted to make it user friendly, if you know what I'm saying. So to an audience, so that they could sit through it and understand it, because it's a very convoluted kind of a script, and it's very difficult to kind of follow unless you kind of know
it's
what's going on.
It's a very interesting storyline because, more importantly, Bato is the main character.
Which is awesome, yeah.
Yes. Do you think that they're going to have androids like that in the future? That's my main question.
Well, here's another thing that's very interesting about Ghost in the Shell, and particularly in Ghost in the Shell 2 Innocence, is that the people are becoming more cybernetic and mechanized. They're becoming more like machines. And the machines are becoming more like people. They're having more AI and more intelligence, and they're becoming more like humans. The thing that was the most human in that movie was the dog, because he was the only thing that wasn't messed with. He was the only natural thing, when you think about it. So, that was, and that particular movie for me was very difficult, but it was a joy for me because it was, I had done the series and I'd done the other movies with another team, another director and another team. And I, not that they didn't do an excellent job, they did, but it was nice to be able to be the director and do Bato the way I wanted to actually do Bato for once. And so I got that opportunity to actually adapt it, direct it, and play Bato. So that, for me, was wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
How does it feel joining the likes of Mark Hamill playing a character like the Joker?
Well, it feels great. Mark Hamill's a very talented guy. It's kind of a funny thing because when I was talking about this in my panel earlier, that when I went to do the auditions for Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, I basically went in there and they said, we want you to do all of the characters. They had DC on the line and they had Warner Brothers on the line. And they basically wanted me to read all of the characters for DC and all the characters for Mortal Kombat. Well, for me, it was like a kid in a candy shop because I got to read Superman and Batman, all these other incredible characters that I grew up, reading comic books and stuff like that. So it was great for me. But when I did the Joker, I don't even know where this character came from. It just, this thing came out of me. It was like almost like you know, when you hear about those people where their bodies rise from their bodies. It was kind of out of body experience. It was kind of like that, to tell you the truth. And I'm really not sure where this character came from out of me, but he came out of me, and I just really loved playing him because he was so vastly different than anything I've ever done before. And plus, he's an iconic character, and it was very cool to be part of the Batman universe. So when I left, the casting director said to me, well, who would you like to do if you could do? I said, well, I would love to do the Joker. And, you know, and so a couple days later, they called me up, and they said, you booked Raiden, and you booked the Joker. And I've been playing those two characters ever since. Now, I had some people on the internet accuse me of trying to sound like Mark Hamill, which kind of cracks me up, because to this day, I have not heard Mark Hamill do the Joker, and that's the truth. And I purposely don't want to hear his Joker, because I don't want to hear somebody else do another character. And I will never, ever go in and try to be another actor playing a character. I'm going to be playing a character. I'm going to be becoming that character, not, you know, that... You know what I mean? And it's hard. It's hard, I know, for actors sometimes to differentiate that, especially when someone's very successful at doing that. And, you know, I'm just glad I got the opportunity to play it. And listen, all through history there's been different actors playing Hamlet. You know, everyone's Hamlet's going to be different than, you know, Richard Burton's Hamlet's going to be different than Gielgud's Hamlet. And everyone's going to have a different take on that character. And that, to me, makes it interesting. You know, I have a different take, I'm sure, than Mark, you know. Apparently, maybe we're more similar than I think, because people compare us a lot. But you know, I have nothing but high praise for him. He's a great guy. I worked with him on Robotech Shadow Chronicles. He was in that film, and I co-directed that and played Captain Vince Grant in that. And you know, he's a great guy, and I think it's great. And he's obviously the most famous person for doing the animated version of the Joker, and that's great. But you know, I think there's room for other people. And you know, look at how many James Bonds we've had. You know, we've had seven James Bonds. So you know, and I think each and every one of them, in their own right, do a good job with that character. It's different, you know, but they all do a good job, and you can watch it, I think, believably with all of them, and say, oh yeah, that's James Bond. You know, so. I think that's the fun of acting, you know. There are a few iconic parts that I think would be very, very, very difficult to replace and try to redo. Like, I think Brando's Streetcar, I think, I don't know anyone else could do it like him, you know. But, you know, got to be open to it, I guess, and at least let people try, you know. And I think that's kind of what it's all about. Whenever you have iconic characters like the Joker, Batman, whatever, you know, long after we're gone, there's going to be other people playing these characters, you know. They're just iconic characters. So there's going to be all kinds of people playing these characters at some point, and they're going to change. And, you know, the Joker, the incarnation of the Joker, he's different, very different in different storylines, and, you know, very, very different. So I'm also another major character, which I can't talk about yet, in the Batman universe, in a series of animated feature films. But I can't talk about that yet, unfortunately. But I'm very excited to be part of that. And I also co-directed Arkham Origins, which is a big Batman game, and I played three characters in that as well. So I'm really getting ensconced in that Batman world. And I actually met Bob Kane. Early on in my career, I met him and talked to him. And it was kind of interesting. So, I've always been a big fan of that character. Hopefully, maybe I'll be able to do Batman one of these days. So, I'd like to do that. So, maybe I could do Batman and the Joker. Fight myself.
So, you had the opportunity to play three of the main characters in Lupin the Third series.
Yes.
You got to play Goemon and Counselor Pagliostro, Jigen in the Lupin the Third TV series, and Inspector Zenigata.
Right.
The one called Fuchsia Mini.
Yes.
Which of those three roles would you say was the most fun, and which one would you say was the most challenging?
You know, I think the one that's really closest to me is Jigen, and the one that I enjoy playing the most is Jigen. Jigen is me, pretty much, and Jigen's got this real dry sense of humor, and he's just kind of this tough guy and doesn't take crap for anyone, and I love that about it. Those are the two things he and Bateau kind of share, that they're just really, I mean, they're fair, but they won't take crap from anyone, and they just see through people, and they see, you know, the phonies and all that, and I just love that about those characters. It was really, I did Goemon a long time ago. It was actually Carl Masek's company that we did it for, and it was so long ago, I barely remember it, to tell you the truth. And as a matter of fact, when we started doing the Lupin series, I didn't even remember I had anything to do with that franchise at all until somebody brought it up to me. Well, you have to remember, I've done over 400 different characters in animation and games, so I don't always remember everything. But, what happened was with a woman called Fuchiko Mine, Funimation got the rights to do it. And they did the Green Coat series, and we did the Red Coat series. And Chris Sabat does Jigen in Texas, and they were very kind to me because they basically called me up and said, "Look, we have this new series," and he said, "You know, I'm doing Jigen," and he said, "I know you'd probably want to do Jigen in it," and I said, "Yeah, I would." But he said, "But we'd love to have you be part of it. Would you consider playing Inspector Zenigata?" Now, in our versions of Lupin, Inspector Zenigata is like this crazy nutball Jerry Lewis kind of character. He's just insane. And I thought, is that what you... He goes, "No." He said, "The Zenigata in this is very dark. He's very dark. In fact, he has sex with Fujiko, and he's like really tough, and he doesn't take any crap from anyone." And I said, "Okay, well, that sounds kind of like more up my alley." So, I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And they brought me out there, and I recorded with them, and we had a blast, and Chris couldn't have been nicer, and I did a few more projects while I was out there, and they were terrific, and they were very kind to me, and I was very grateful to be part of that. So, yeah. So now I've done Goemon, Jigen, Inspector Zenigata, now I just have to do Lupin and Fujiko, and I'll have done the entire cast. And actually, there's somebody at a convention who wants to have me read a scene with all five characters in there and do all the characters. So that might be interesting. We'll see how that goes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Issues for him, please?
I have a particular question. According to IMDb, you are credited as the English language scriptwriter for such cinema masterpieces as Cinema Paradiso,
yeah.
Takagoi, the Korean War movie,
yeah.
And also, of course, Innocence and even Bo 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 Bo.
Yeah.
So when you actually have that particular...
Women Under the... Cinema Paradiso, Bella Pock, Eat, Drink,
yeah.
Man, Woman, a bunch of Academy Award-winning films I wrote and directed.
I was just picking like some of
sure.
my favorites
yeah, yeah.
right here, just stuff that I either watched when I was a kid that inspired me.
Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting. Like, do they give you the material or do they give you the script when they ask you? Because it's kind of interesting when the script is in a foreign language. Do they ask you, this is the idea of the movie, or please watch the movie and
well, we usually
make an adaption from it?
We get a script, and then we get the script translated to English. Now,
okay.
Once you get it translated, it's not going to fit in the mouth
yeah.
at all. So my job is to take that dialogue and take whatever the line is and try to make it look like that's what they're saying. And it's a very tough thing to do and make it look good. I kind of pride myself when, especially on these live action movies, that it looks like they're speaking English when I'm done, because I don't want it to look like some chop socky piece of swill that, you know, see where these guys are, you know, their mouths are moving and the things are, you know, they've stopped talking, or they're, you know, their mouths aren't moving and you hear them talking, and it's horrible. So we want it to look like it, not only just not to just fit the mouth when their mouth is moving, but actually fit the way their mouth moves,
lips,
the lip sync, and make it, yes. And the labials, hit the labials and the plosives and the B's and the M's and all that stuff. You know, we want it to look like... So you have to come up with words that mean the same, that if their mouth closes, it's an M or a B or, you know, something that looks like they're saying that. And it's very tricky. You know, some languages are easier than others, like French and German are a little easier because they're a little more conducive, because it looks like you can make that look like English. But the Asian languages are very tough. They move their mouths differently because they form their words differently, and it's, you know, it's very tough, and it's tough to make that look like English. Then you'll get stuff like from Italy or from Spain, where they'll come in and they'll be saying, ah, la, 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 they'll be speaking for 10 minutes, and the line will be, "Hi, come in, have a seat," you know, and you have to make that stretch out. Or you'll have something like in Japanese where they go, bop, and that'll be it. And then that'll be, "Hi, come in, have a seat. Nice to see you. How's your family? How's your mom doing?" And you have to make something like that fit in that one, you know what I mean? So it depends on what language it is. And you really have to, you know, it's a very tough art. There's very few of us that do it and do it well.
Linguistics and
yeah.
ideas being created.
And that's why I was picked by DreamWorks and Universal Pictures to fly all over the world to supervise our films into other languages. I supervised Galaxy Quest and Gladiator and Chicken Run and Madagascar and all these films. I went all over the world supervising. And I supervised the mix of Gladiator, Pinewood Studios. I did all this stuff because there's very few of us, like I said, that do this kind of work and really know what they're doing. And people always say, well, do you speak all those languages? And it's like, no, I can barely speak English, but I'm an expert in ADR and I know what I'm doing when it comes to that. I've been doing this for 30 years. Yeah. Sure.
You run a production company with your wife, Ellen.
Yes.
What steps did you take to start from the beginning, like just an idea in your head, a thought, to actually making it a reality?
Well, the way the company came about was, you know, people were hiring me to direct all these projects, and I realized that, sometimes the companies didn't really want to be involved or have, they kind of wanted to basically say, here, you take it and do it, you know what I mean? And so in order for me to have a payroll and hire actors and all that, I had to kind of incorporate and make a company. So that's kind of how it came about. And we incorporated in 2004, so we've been going for quite a while now. And, and we have a payroll and we do that, hire the actors and do all that stuff. And, we do pretty much what we've always been doing. And, sometimes companies will hire me just as a director. Sometimes they'll hire me as an adapter director. Sometimes they'll hire me as a voice. It just depends on how they work it. But it all goes through my company. And if they hire our company to do a project, then our company hires the actors. We cast the actors, and then we pay them through our company. And that's the way it works.
So last June, I believe it was last June, you guys released sometimes over the first three English dub episodes of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yes.
Yes. So as a big fan of the show, we all want to know, will we hear more of your Joseph and Joe stuff?
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. I don't know when exactly, but I know that the reaction was spectacular and people loved it. And I got to say, of all the projects I've done in my career, this has gotten some of the most excitement from anything I've ever done. And people are really excited about it, and they're waiting for it. And I know that that they're working on doing more of them. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Issues program?
1990s.
Yeah.
Pretty much the golden age of all these Japanese imported live-action shows.
Yeah.
Such as Power Rangers, Beetleborgs, VR Troopers.
The golden era or the golden shower era?
Take it which you will. Mm. I just remember as a child, seeing those. I did not know younger because according to, of course, like I reviewed on IMDb, as far as specifics back in the 1990s, you were a voice on VR Troopers, Masked Rider, Kamen Rider Z, Beetleborgs, Power Rangers. My question is,
why?
Was it fun? Like, did you do that? Were you able to do that in all in one studio? Okay, this is a script for Beetleborgs. Oh no, don't do that. Next one. We're like, oh no, or did you have to jump? Did you have to drive all around LA to different areas?
Well, all those shows that you mentioned, VR Troopers, Beetleborgs, Power Rangers, all those were done by Saban.
Yeah.
And Saban had a studio out in Valencia that they recorded all this stuff at. Now, they would shoot one show at a time. They wouldn't mix the different shows together. Okay. So if they were doing Power Rangers, you do Power Rangers. They're doing Mass Rider, you do Mass Rider. They're doing Beetleborgs, you do Beetleborgs. So we'd go in and do that. And they liked me and they cast me in all those shows. So I was Colonel Icebot in VR Troopers also, which was kind of a fun character. And I did about 40 different monster voices in Power Rangers, and also I was one of the co-ADR directors on Power Rangers and directed.
Yeah, you were in Power Rangers for more than a decade.
Well, I don't know if it was maybe. I don't know if it was quite that long, but I was in there for quite a while. But yeah, I did a lot of that stuff, and for a while that was they were the only game in town, so those of us who did voice work, we were happy to work for those guys, and they started doing a lot of animation stuff as well.
Work for a good voice actor.
Yeah.
As far as like we've got cartoons or live action stuff from Japan, you want in? Yeah, love to hang around with my friends, talk like a monster.
I did one character called Darkheart, and I think was that in VR Troopers? Might have been VR Troopers. And it was exciting to me because that was the first time I'd ever done a character and seen an action figure of my character in a store. So that was exciting. That was the first time that had ever happened to me. Now I've got, you know, tons of characters I do, and they're all over the place. But that was kind of the first one, so that was kind of a cool thing, you know.
Well, so you start doing the lines, and you see the toy store, like, argh, argh, argh. Hey, kids, look, that's me.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you feel are the pros and cons between video game voice acting and animated voice acting?
Well, you know, the basic difference is when you're doing anime, you're doing something that's already been done. So you're replacing the dialogue, and you're now dubbing it. So you have to be concerned about the lip sync.
Okay.
So that is like another skill that you have to, on top of creating a character and doing a voice and making it sound natural, now you have to make sure it fits in the lips and looks natural with that. When you're doing the games, most of the games are original animation, where you basically go in and you record the dialogue as your character, and then they animate to your dialogue tracks. And it's a lot easier to do, and it pays a lot better. So.
Oh, wow. You figure the harder one would pay more.
Well, you would. In a ideal world, dubbing would pay a lot more, because dubbing's a lot harder, but for some reason, dubbing is kind of the bastard stepchild of the voice world, and it never got the respect that it deserves. And there's very few people that can dub well, to be honest with you. And you know, it's a very difficult. You know, we bring people in all the time. We bring in celebrities all the time. They're just terrible at it. They have no idea what they're doing, and it's very tough. And it's a very tough art form, you know. And it's kind of like you know, you're patting your head and rubbing your tummy and chewing gum and doing all that stuff at the same time. It's just, there's a lot going on that you have to think about while you're doing that stuff. So it's a lot more difficult, doesn't pay as well as the other stuff. So I prefer the other stuff just because it pays better and it's a lot easier. So, you know.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, Boston.
So this is a question I like to ask all of the voice actors or any actor that gets interviewed. And maybe a little bit tricky considering you just said you voice over 400 characters. So.
Yeah.
If you find yourself stuck in a deserted island, which three characters would you like to have around you that you have portrayed in the past to keep you safe until your imminent rescue?
I can't have any women with me? That's terrible. That would keep me sane? No, I don't know about that. Who would I have? Well, I'd have to have Raiden. Raiden would get us off the island immediately, right? And I sure as hell wouldn't want the Joker. We don't want him on the island. He would try to kill everybody. And maybe Bateau would be good to have. And Jigen would be fun to talk. You know, have some drinks and talk about stuff.
You can shoot coconuts off.
Yeah. But I'd prefer Fujiko, actually, if I had my druthers. But of course, I don't know. She's not so savory either, though, actually. So she'd probably, you know, find a boat and leave us all on the island.
Really quick question.
Sure.
What was your, I think I said most easiest, what was the easiest voice acting role you ever had? Would you say it was like the Wii Yoga game that you voiced with Troy Baker?
The Wii Yoga game? I was the instructor on that thing?
It apparently lists you on IMDb.
Yeah, I know. I don't even remember
like
that thing.
Come all the people. It's very interesting because I can just imagine you played so many intense characters, if you could just be like, up your arms.
Yeah, anytime I can do that, it's like I go, thank you, God, you know, seriously. Thank you, God, because it's like there's so many times when I was telling a story in there. I'll tell you guys, it's kind of a funny story. I was working on Spec Ops, which is a Call of Duty. I do a lot of those too, Call of Duty games, where, you know, when you do those combat games, you're basically just in there screaming your ass off, you know, for hours and hours and hours. Well, I was supposed to be in this Spec Ops session for 4 hours, and it ran to 6 hours, and it was all screaming, because you're supposed to be yelling over the tanks and the gunfire and everything like that. So at the end of the 6 hours, the guy says to me, he goes, well, that's good. I saved the last 10 lines for you for the end of the day. They're the best lines. I said, what are they? He said, well, we want you to be burned alive by a flamethrower for 30 seconds, and we need 10 of these. I said, you need 10 of these? He goes, yeah, 10 of these, and go. So then I had to do that, like, you know, after I'd like blown my pipes out. And then after that, I had to go to a Legend of Korra recording, and I had no voice at all. So, but it turned out well. I I didn't have to. I played Chief Sycon on Legend of Korra, and I didn't have to do that character that day. She actually, Andrea Romano brought me in to do some pickups for another character who was a dock worker who was kind of a thug. Well, I had my voice was like this. I had no voice at all. So she had me try a couple times, and I couldn't get it. I finally said to her, "Let me redo the whole character in this voice." And she goes, "No, I can't ask you to do it." I said, "Yeah, let me do it. I want to do it." So they talked amongst themselves for a minute, and they came back and said, "Okay, let's do it. See what it sounds like." They re-recorded it. I did the whole thing with that voice, and it sounds phenomenal. You know, it just sounds, because this guy's got this voice like this, and he's on the docks, you know. And it was unbelievable. And it came out great. So, you know, even when I watch that episode, I go, wow, it's like, it doesn't sound anything like me. And it's such a perfect voice for that guy. So that was a happy ending to a weird situation, but, you know, that happens. But, the ones where you go in and you can just talk and be conversational are a dream come true to me. The ones where you have to go in and you have to be all amped up and screaming and doing all that, which a lot of them are.
You wake up late, go there, read a couple lines, a couple hours, make a lot of money, go home, eat dinner early, relax. Best day, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm doing this game right now for a company in Australia. I can't really talk about what it is, but
NDAs.
The NDAs. That's right. I hate NDAs. I hate them. Anyway, it's been really nice because basically I can record it at my leisure. He's given me like 43 pages of dialogue, and I go through it and I send him, you know, a few pages every day. And he's been great. They love everything I do. And I just record it at home. I don't have to worry about a director. I don't have to worry about going to the studio. I can show up in my pajamas, you know, in the morning and drink some coffee and shoot it out to him. Everything I've done, he's thrilled about. So, I mean, I'll tell you something. I would like to do more of those kind of jobs, to tell you the truth. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Great meeting you.
Nice meeting you, too.
Long-time fan.
Oh, thank you.
It's real.
Thank you. I appreciate that.